creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
On today's episode of Culture Click, we sit down for tea in downtown Winona. The founders of Mandala Center for Wellness enlightened me on the subject of tea, which is incredibly diverse. Keep listening to learn how tea can be used in conjunction with medical treatments, the difference between fresh tea and the traditional bagged tea one finds at the supermarket, how different teas have different benefits, proper brewing facts, and much more. You're listening to Culture Click with Terry Tenseth. Today we're talking to Garrett Sorensen and Sarah Crawford from Mandala Tea about tea and everything we probably don't know but should know about it. How did you two get involved in tea culture?
Well, we both have our roots in wellness and healthcare and working with people in that way. And much of the study that we did through massage therapy was Eastern healing arts, Chinese medical massage, which is Tuina. Massage from Thailand, shiatsu from Japan, and within all of those practices, there is a very holistic element to all of them, which is not only the body work, but how do you take care of yourself, energy flow, all of these things. And within all of them, there's this talk of tea. It's a very big part of Eastern culture. And the depths to which they would talk about tea really intrigued both of us. And so we just kind of started experimenting. And Garrett gets the credit for being the ultimate researcher because he dove in and kept searching and searching for the highest quality, the best experience that he could find and that we could share. And not being that satisfied, we ended up going directly to the source, China, the homeland of tea, connecting with some merchants and directly to the small family farms where the clean, pure, fresh, historical, traditional, beautiful stuff is coming from.
When I think about looking back during my time when I was going through Chinese medicine school, what I began seeing was these, my instructors would talk about the virtues of tea, and I would see these old drawings and paintings of people taking tea out in nature, and that always, that pulled at my heart, and that's when I said, there's something there for me, and that's when I began beginning to study tea, reading about tea, bringing tea into the country, and then it was when I was serving tea to massage clients when I would be getting to know them or before their massage session, I watched as a few things would happen. One, they'd come in talking a mile a minute, and the voices would be much higher in pitch, and I'd see their shoulders up around their ears. And as I'd serve them tea and they began sipping this, what I call an elixir sometimes, I would watch their shoulders drop, their voices lower, things would slow down. And I said to myself, half my work as a massage therapist was just done by that warm cup of tea that they just drank. So, and that's thanks to L-theanine, which we can talk about in a minute when we're talking about more health things. But I started having clients say, hey, this is great. Where do I get good tea? And so then I began importing a pound or two at a time and sending people home with their little plastic baggies. I didn't have fancy labels or anything like that. I just weigh it out on a scale. And now it's come to the point where we sometimes have shipments of 600 pounds between here and China coming this way. So,
well, Sarah, you had mentioned that you had to find the local farms. How do you go through that process and find out who you are going to get supply from?
Mm-hmm. You go there and work on the connections. You know, we have merchants that we work with there that we've come to trust and understand and help us to meet people there. You know, pristine growing conditions is our biggest concern, you know, growing in clean growing areas. So we've learned that just partly by trial and error and also just by studying the country, knowing, you know, what's happening in China and where good growing areas are that make us comfortable. So that's probably the basis of it.
Is it kind of a frightening experience to think I'm going to go out there and just kind of meet people and see what it is? Is it a trial and error?
We have three or four main connections that we work with that have gone out and done a lot of the scouting for us. We wouldn't be able to go out and just say, hey, we're just going to start scouring the T Mountains and looking for these families and everything. These are people that have, the people that we work with have already established some of those connections. Mm-hmm. Now, when I go there again in March and April of this year, I'll be heading down to where Zishuanbana, which is where all the Puar teas are grown, the teas that are made to be aged like wine. I'll be heading there and going into the Tea Mountains and meeting some of these small growers, establishing some new connections and acquiring more raw materials to have pressed into our own private label teas. Areas that are, like Sarah said, pristine growing areas. If a farm is growing tea organically and it's in the shadow of one of the big factory cities there or one of the really large cities, to me, it's not organic anymore because it's got particulate matter falling on it all day long. So I want to get teas from areas where the air, the water, the wind, and the rain is all really clean. Because I'm drinking this tea all the time, and I certainly don't want my customers drinking tea that's been adulterated by pesticides and chemicals or coal-burning plants and sulfur and everything else that can occur.
Well, I bet people don't even think of that probably most of the time when they're thinking of having a cup of tea.
Right. No, it's probably true. Although now, especially here in the United States, there's so much more education being done about what is organic. And you can tell by the sales here in the U.S. of, 10 years ago, the sales of organic foods versus today and the sale of organic foods, it's night and day. I mean, it's 10 times as much business being done in organic. So there's much more awareness of it. And the other thing, too, is that people that begin to turn their mind towards the idea of tea and tea culture, guess what else follows in place a lot of times? They start beginning to think about other ways that they can become more healthy. We see it all the time. They begin getting more aware about what's going on in their bodies and their minds, and they start going, oh, well, what else can I do? This is really helping me feel good. How about I try this supplement or try organic food or grass-fed free-range meats instead of the conventionally raised stuff? So you start seeing, or maybe yoga. Maybe I'll try yoga and maybe meditation. And so, yeah.
So you're saying it's transitional.
Yep, tea has been the starting place for a lot of people in America to, and this is just the beginning. I mean, what's happening with tea in the U.S., it's booming. So this is just the beginning of more and more people turning their mind towards healthier things. And sometimes tea can be a thing they come to out of yoga. Maybe their yoga teacher served tea before a class or their acupuncturist served them tea. And maybe they came to it from already beginning to explore that, but it's usually a part of it.
But it's also everywhere. I mean, you can't open a magazine without there being something about tea in there, or, you know, the health benefits are raved about in medical journals, and, you know, everybody knows that now. I think that's pretty common knowledge that tea is good for you.
So it's as common as the coffee ads you used to see.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. The difference being, you know, this is actually something that's sustainable that won't cause negative effects if you overdo it.
Yeah, you might have a little more spring in your step and colors will look a little brighter if you have too much tea, but it's certainly not going to shock your heart like too much coffee will do, and it's not the 1-2 punch to the kidney adrenal system that that coffee can be. And I'm not here to disparage coffee in moderation. It's fine, but tea is much gentler to the system. I was helping a friend of mine move in college. I was 21 years old, and I had 2 cups of coffee, and about an hour later I thought I was having a heart attack. And I made my friend take me to the hospital, and they hooked me up to the EKG in the emergency room because I told them what was going on. And they said, well, the good news is you're not having a heart attack. The bad news is you've got to stay away from caffeine. And so for many years, I didn't even drink tea because I knew it had some caffeine in it. Again, 9 years later, when I was studying Chinese medicine and finding out about tea, I said, well, I got to check this out. And my experiments led me to find that I had zero problems with my heart when I would drink tea, even very strong tea. I mean, there are days when I drink tea that is really strong and never have any of those heart issues. But there's different chemical compounds besides caffeine within tea that help to temper the caffeine, which I should say is lower than the amount of caffeine that's in coffee.
Okay.
I mean, much lower. But you also have other compounds that help to temper it and slow down its uptake into the system and create more of a plateau effect rather than a sharp spike up with coffee. And that sharp ramp down, everybody knows when they're coming down off of coffee, right? Got to have another cup. Or if I don't have a cup by 8 a.m., I get a headache sort of thing. With tea, it's such a gentle slope up and a plateau effect and then a slow ramp down. And you don't notice when you're coming down off a tea. And so nobody's jonesing for a cup of tea. They know it makes them feel good, but they're not going to get a headache if they don't have it.
Right.
Well, I guess we could go into the benefits and how it is used in conjunction with other therapies that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just the big thing, right, when you think about, we talk about the caffeine. Caffeine in itself can have some health benefits. It can prevent you from having a car accident if you're too sleepy, right? I mean, that's a pretty good benefit. But the anti-anxiety compound within tea, which is what I've really been thinking about a lot lately. The first 200 or 300 years that tea was, shall we say, had been discovered, for lack of a better term, it was prescribed only medicinally by doctors of Chinese medicine. And I should say it's all from one plant, Camellia sinensis. And so when people have heard of white, green, yellow, oolong, black, or pu'er tea, it all comes from one plant. It just depends on how it's processed. But different teas within that six category range have heightened effects. Black tea is going to be better for helping to lower the LDL cholesterol in the blood, and some fascinating studies there. White tea is going to be higher in antioxidants. Green tea tends to have more of the L-theanine, which is the anti-anxiety compound, and it's also a muscle relaxer. So that, just from the point of view of drinking it and then 30 to 40 minutes later having this calming effect, despite the fact that there's caffeine in it, it's really quite amazing and helps to keep the blood flowing for sure.
Mm-hmm. And all of those, all tea has all of those benefits that Garrett's talking about, just each is a little stronger in one than another. So you're still going to get antioxidants in your greens and your oolongs and your black teas, but the white tea is known to be the highest in that. Same with the LDL studies. You know, all tea is going to help to pull fat out of the blood, to cleanse your system and help to lower some of those things, but black tea is shown to be the most powerful at those benefits. Mm-hmm.
Or like oolong tea, which has gained such a reputation lately as being this amazing weight loss. Exactly. And even in China, they call wulong, oh, I'm digressing. Mm-hmm. Wulong translates to black dragon, but we call it oolong tea here. Even in China, they call oolong tea slimming. And so all teas, all these things coming from Camellia sinensis do help to boost the metabolism. Is oolong tea the miracle that somebody on Oprah made it out to be a few months ago or last year? No. You can't expect to eat the standard American diet, not exercise, and think that oolong tea is going to shave 40 pounds off your body. It's not going to. It is a great way to keep the body hydrated for sure, more hydrating than water, actually, tea is. And it will help to boost the metabolism. It can be used in conjunction with a responsible diet and some exercise to help to lose weight, for sure. And what Sarah was mentioning, too, the idea that helping to draw some of the bad fats away from the heart. If you would ask a Tibetan 1,200 years ago, listen, why do you drink pu'er tea? Well, they'd tell you, it tastes great. But they like how it gets the fat out of their blood. And we're talking about a culture that didn't have, back then, they didn't have million-dollar studies and electromagnetic or those huge, you know, the blood tests and the microscopes and everything. And
on top of the mountain and ate yak and drank yak butter and couldn't grow vegetables and, yeah, you know, drank this tea and were healthy.
Yeah. And it's interesting now, as roads and cars and trucks have made their way into some of the more remote areas of Tibet and Nepal and China, areas in which traditionally people were living on very little vegetables, not a lot of vegetables grow in the Himalayas, but they would live on, yes, like Sarah was saying, yak meat and yak butter, and sometimes a little rice thrown in there. But they typically used tea was a big part. It's called yak butter tea, where they would use Himalayan sea salt, yak butter, and sometimes some barley and tea, and they would brew it all together. It was a big part of keeping themselves warm and keeping enough fat in their bodies so that they could stay warm in an environment that's pretty harsh. So what's happened now is roads have come in. I heard a physician in one of those more remote areas talk about how, as the culture there has gotten away from their traditional butter tea diet, is what she called it, a butter tea diet, and Western foods have made their way there, that she is now seeing diseases she has never, ever had to think about. She doesn't even know what some of these diseases are. So here she is. She said, I've been practicing this medicine for 70 years, and I'm now seeing diseases, especially in the young people, because they're faster to ditch traditional diets. She says, here I am having to catalog all these new diseases. And when they asked her in this interview, well, what do you think it is? She said, because they've gotten away from their yak butter tea diet. So that's pretty telltale to me that the tea can be used in conjunction with the food to keep the body healthier.
And you were talking earlier about it being used in conjunction with medical treatments as well to help boost.
Right. Well, cancer in particularly, I mean, we're trying to learn so much about that. And we know that antioxidants help to kill free radicals in the body, which is a big problem for age, well, that's aging, but most disease has something to do with the breakdown of healthy cell functioning in the body and getting rid of those natural metabolic wastes in the body. If we're not doing that properly, we have a backup of our system. We have growths of things that, you know, shouldn't necessarily be there that start causing problems with the functioning of everything else. So we know antioxidants are a huge part of that process and can really help with all of those things. So that, across the board, disease in general. You know, specifically, we've worked with one woman whose doctor said polyphenols. She's recovering from cancer. And she said polyphenols as much as you can get every single day. And so she's drinking white tea. She's got her regime, and that's her plan to stay in recovery.
Oh, I've got tons to talk about.
Okay. Well, what about the dental health?
Oh, yeah, the dental health. But one thing we had mentioned earlier about the LDL cholesterol, mm-hmm. I know because of the, sorry to anybody that's working in the pharmaceutical industry, because of the huge amount of marketing that's been done about cholesterol and this, the horror of cholesterol, I don't buy into that. Everybody's going to have varying numbers in their cholesterol, and to think there's one number that we can shoot for and it's going to be ideal, I don't think that's right. But the they did a study in which they took this was two groups of women with the same diets over the course of, what was it, 16 weeks? Mm-hmm. Or was it 8 weeks? Anyways, it was a relatively short time in which group A did had some caffeine added into their water, and group B drank black tea. No milk, no sugar in the black tea, just black tea, 4 to 5 cups a day. And then they had the equivalent of the caffeine over here, thinking, well, is it caffeine that's helping to lower the LDL cholesterol, or is it the compounds within the tea? What they found is that the group A, actually there was two groups, one that had some caffeine in the water, one that didn't have caffeine, and then there were the tea drinkers, so it's three groups. But groups A and B then, the caffeine or no caffeine group, cholesterol stayed the same, they saw an average of 16-point drop of the LDL cholesterol with the group of women that were drinking black tea. That's huge. That's more than the anti-statin drugs are doing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that, just thinking about that. So another way that tea can be used in conjunction with heart health. Then Sarah mentioned the dental health piece of it. It is strengthening to the teeth. There's natural fluoride that occurs in tea, which is good for the teeth, unlike the stuff that they put in the water supply, which is a byproduct of, or a waste product of, the fertilizer making industry. They did a study where they had, it was over 4 days, they had two groups of people eating the same diet. Group A brushed and flossed after every meal. Group B only rinsed their mouths out with green tea after every meal for those 4 days. And at the end of those 4 days, the group that had only rinsed their mouths out with green tea following meals had way less cavity-causing bacteria than group A, which had brushed and flossed after every meal. So I'm not saying don't brush and floss, right. But what if you brush and floss and rinse your mouth out with tea? It helps to alkalize the body environment as well. I love that story.
What are the essential needs to know? I mean, we've gone over a couple things. If somebody's looking to delve into this and to start, you know, how do you steep? Where do you start?
Well, I always want everyone to know that it can be really easy, and you can create a ritual or a process in your life that doesn't have to be difficult, that it should be very simple to do, and also that it should taste good.
That reminds me of that story of when I was about to do a massage, and it was a new client, so I was serving tea before the massage, and poured a cup of green tea for him and one for me. I said, "Oh, you drink green tea?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I drink green tea." And he let the cup sit there, and I said, "Well, go ahead and give it a try." And he lifted the cup up to his lips, and he drank, and his eyebrows raised, and he said, "This is green tea?" And I said, "Yeah, it's green tea." And he said, "I've been drinking green tea for years because I heard it was good for me, but I thought because it was good for me, it was supposed to taste bad." Right. So he had what most people's experience is with tea, typically in a tea bag, which is basically just dust, tea dust inside a tea bag, and usually made with water that's too hot. Now, various teas require different temperature water. So most people's experience with tea has just been bad. Oh yeah, they hear it's good for you, but if tea tastes good, it's going to be even better for you because you're going to drink more. And that's going to be more helpful. You're going to enjoy the experience a lot more. All medicine should not be bitter. Some medicine should really feel and taste good. And that is the case with good loose leaf tea. And good loose leaf tea is going to have more benefits anyway than some dust that's been sitting around in a tea bag for who knows how many years on somebody's shelf or in the warehouse. So
with the steeping, let's say you pick out something, let's say you pick out an oolong, right? How long do you let it steep? Like, what temperature should the water be, and what quantity should you be making? Should you be making a large pot of it, or just a little bit at a time?
Personal preference. Yeah. Depends on how you're going to brew your tea, what your day looks like, how your tea drinking looks. If you're going to sit by yourself and make a pot of tea with fresh, loose leaf tea, high grade, in one serving, you should be able to infuse it or steep it 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times. So if you're drinking tea by yourself, if you're going to brew it in a 16-ounce pot and be able to infuse it 5 or 6 or 7 times, after you drink 1 or 2 pots, you're going to be totally waterlogged, right?
Yeah.
So probably not the best method to get the most out of your tea that fits your needs. I mean, if we're sitting with, you know, 4 people, it's a different story. You know, each pot is 4 ounces for each person. Mm-hmm. So you got to take a look at what makes sense for your life. And most people probably don't know that you should be able to infuse the same leaf multiple times, unlike a tea bag, which is one,
two,
maybe, right?
Maybe
they don't recommend. They would say it's one, right?
Right.
But all of the flavor and all of the nutrients are zapped from that tea bag in one infusion, just because it's ground into dust.
If there's any nutrients left.
If it's not too old, mm-hmm. but we'll never know how old they are.
Yep.
There's no way of knowing that. So if you have a full leaf tea that you're infusing, the flavors and the nutrients are going to come out gradually over time, over a few infusions. We have some general guidelines for brewing. The quantity will depend on the weight of the tea. Some teas are dried and rolled really tightly and will be more condensed. Mm-hmm. Others are full leaves, you know, full big leaves that look like you just picked them off of a plant. So you have to look at some of those factors when deciding, you know, how much tea leaf to use. But in the end, it's really personal preference. And we give basic guidelines for tea brewing. There's only one variety of tea that likes boiling water, and that's pour tea, which most people in America haven't experienced. So if you're brewing green tea with boiling water, you're scorching it because it's too delicate. Okay. That's why it's hard to control the flavor in that way.
So, 160 to 175 degrees for green tea. Anytime you go over 175, you're just asking for off flavors with green tea.
Okay.
Oolong, you had asked a question about temperatures for oolong tea. You're looking at 195 up to 205 if it's a darker oolong tea. Then a fully oxidized oolong tea is a black tea, and black teas, because it's a hardier leaf, 208 degrees.
Still not boiling.
Still not a full boil. Sometimes people come in, you see how many steepings we've already done with this. People come in and they see me do this and they go, well, that's just great, but it looks so difficult and everything. I think about the man, Senrikyu, a Japanese man who is credited with being the father of the Japanese tea ceremony, which is a 2.5-3.5 hour thing. It's very intricate and very regimented. If you looked at that ceremony, you'd go, oh my gosh, I'll never be a tea master. I'm reminded of the words that I use all the time when I'm doing tea classes that he said, tea is naught but this. First you heat the water, then you make the tea, then you drink it properly. That is all you need to know. I love that.
That's
because cool. It really breaks it down that this is it. You've got a few general guidelines. We talk about water temperature, steeping times, also personal preference. You've got to find out how to make your cup of tea. You've got to experiment and have some fun with it and be willing to let a cup or two get a little bitter sometimes. Bitter is okay. It's good for the heart energy. And so some people might just absolutely fall in love with certain oolong teas and not like that pu'er tea or that green tea. Some people find a certain niche, a style of tea that they really like. And then there's people like Sarah and I who, if it's good leaf, we'll drink it all. Yeah, it does not matter. But I really encourage people to experiment and play with their tea and be willing to have their favorite tea change, sometimes from day to day, or in my case, every couple hours, I have a new favorite.
What's one that you would recommend people try that they probably never tried before?
Well, I don't know. Has everyone tried the jasmine pearls? It's so popular. Everybody seems to love it. That's the one we're drinking now.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Yeah, Dragon Phoenix Jasmine Pearls that Sarah mentioned, it's a great one. But pu'er tea as well. Pu'er happens to be my favorite style of tea. That's why I'm going there to China again in March or April, is to source more pu'er teas. I find the world of pu'er fascinating. The idea of aging teas, much like one would a wine, that's beautiful. I think Americans need to try good tea in general, because a good tea is very enjoyable, no matter what kind it is. I mean, I've got friends that love pu'er tea, but if they taste a good green tea, they go, ah, wonderful.
All right.
And so it doesn't matter what kind it is, as long as it's good and prepared to your liking. One of the simplest things, we saw people in China all the time just pouring hot water into a glass, dropping the leaves in there and just waiting for all those leaves to sink to the bottom. And by the time the leaves sunk to the bottom, the glass was cool enough to hold, and so therefore it would be cool enough to drink. Because all the leaf had sunk to the bottom, they could sip out of the cup and not get all the leaf in their inner teeth.
Yeah.
So the simplified version of that that we've brought from China to here and have manufactured for us is something called the tea thermos. And it's a double-walled glass thermos. Looks like a thermos, but you can see through it. And it's got a strainer built into
right.
the top. So you
I've
put
seen those.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, they're all over now. And you put the leaf in there, add the hot water, and you can sip right out of the cup, right out of the glass thermos. And so some leaves, like those dragon phoenix pearls, the jasmine tea Sarah was talking about, that lends itself really well to sitting in water for a long time. And when the water gets about 1.5 inches deep, just add more hot water and you can keep working the same leaf for hours. Or you can use that tea glass as a teapot and pour everything off into another cup or a pitcher like what we're doing here today.
What is the drying process for the tea leaves?
Different for each variety of tea, and that's really one aspect of what creates the different tea varieties.
Okay.
White tea is just picked and allowed to wither dry. There's no drying process done to it. So when you look at a white tea, those are the ones that really look like a full leaf that just got picked off in
right.
springtime. So they just allow it to wither dry. Greens, then there's some sort of heat process used, and that's also what creates different greens within the green family. So some are pressed in a wok and flattened, you know, around a wok and dried. So the leaf is really almost seared. It's shiny and flat, whereas others are rolled in a bag, you know, almost put in like a big dryer kind of drying mechanism, and they turn into more of, you know, curls or wrap into themselves. The jasmine pearls we've been talking about are hand rolled. So they take green tea leaves and they roll them in their hands into individual pearls.
Wow. Okay.
So when one of those pearls opens, it's maybe 3 full leaves that will open up into a fully formed leaf once it's, you know, brewed and expanded.
That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oolong teas are taken through a slight oxidation process. It's like when you cut an apple in half and that browning starts to happen. They actually, on purpose, do this to a tea leaf to varying degrees. So they'll, in lots of different ways, somehow, you know, break the leaf, bruise it somehow before they dry it to allow an oxidation to start happening, and it creates this different flavor from green tea in that process, and you can oxidize it for longer periods of time than a fully oxidized tea leaf is black tea. So it's all about what you do to the leaf once it's been picked that creates those different varieties.
So you want to tell me a little bit about the tea classes you offer and what goes on in those?
Oh, it's an ancient Chinese secret what goes on in them. No.
Wow, so I can't get in
the No, it's really, I custom tailor the classes depending on what each group. I mean, sometimes it might just be couples, 2 people that come in, up to 6 people. When we do classes at the co-op or larger classes like we did last year at Frozen River Film Festival, I have to do more of a general approach to tea. We have some people that come in smaller groups that want to learn about one style of tea and how to brew it. And so in that case, I might give them brewing tips and hints to help them get the best experience out of, say, pu'er tea. Other times when we have groups that want to get a taste of the different style of teas, we might walk through making a white tea and then a green tea and an oolong. And in other words, moving from the lighter teas up to the darker teas. Sprinkled in there, I've got months worth of stuff to talk about as far as tea lore, tea history, health benefits like what we began talking about, and the different ways that tea is processed. So it all depends on what people want out of the classes, but when they come here into the tea room. But when we're out and about, we do more of the generalist approach, give people a little bit of the history, a little bit about how tea is processed, a little bit about how it's prepared, and do some of the tasting of the tea. So that's what happens in the classes, and can also make some recommendations as far as some good further reading to do on tea. But the biggest thing is to dive in and experiment with it. What I really get out of the classes, or what I see people getting out of the classes, is to give the students, the participants, if you will, the opportunity to have the confidence that they can make a great cup of tea. They see me doing this intricate sort of thing, and they may go, oh my gosh, I can't do that. But once they see that it's so simple, just like that quote that I gave you from Senrikyu, they can go, yeah, I can do this. I can do this at home. I can do this. And then pretty soon they'll practice a little bit, and they begin sharing tea with their friends and family, and it spreads out from there.
Is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to mention?
I really think that tea can be such a joyful exploration. Is it meditative at times? Yes. Can it be rigid and regimented? Sure. Just like what we were talking about with the Japanese tea ceremony. But at the heart of tea is joy and good health and making wishes for the people that you're preparing tea for, that they have a long and healthy life. It's about grace. It's about love. Tea is an expression of nature, good water, and something that grew out of the earth, the tea leaf. It's about connecting up with the past. Every time I have a cup of tea, sometimes I am back 1,000 years sitting next to a meditation cave and sipping a cup of tea, just like some of those great monks did 1,000 years ago and are still doing today. I just want to see people practice joy with tea. And to have fun. I had these two 14-year-olds were a part of a class that I did last year. And I thought, oh, I wonder how much fun they're having,
yeah,
right? Wow, tea, whoopee! When you're 14 and all you're thinking about is rock music and girls and the idea that you're going to get a driver's license someday. Here's these two 14-year-old kids taking a class, and about halfway through I was preparing an oolong tea, and the one kid turns to the other and he said, this is way cooler than Red Bull. So I love that because, like I said, people can see me doing this and think, well, that's just too much. But then you see how groovy, how hip, how fun tea can really be. And that's what I like to get out there.
Well, I think people like structure and process, too, mm-hmm. as much as they don't like the idea of it when they're doing it.
Yes. It's amazing to me. Sometimes I totally geek out and I'll weigh tea on my little gram scale and I'll have the water at the exact same temperature I did yesterday with the same tea weighed out to the tenth of a gram and the same temperature water in the same brewing vessel and everything, but the tea will be completely different because we're different. Each passing minute, we're different. Day to day, we change. The atmosphere changes. So the character of the tea leaf will be changing. Our experiences are constantly changing. So it really helps to turn people's mind towards the idea of tuning in. People drinking tea tend to tune in more and become more aware of what's going on in their body and what's going on around them.
Is that the water pot?
Yeah, that... It sings that little song to me when it comes to a boil. So, well, what's fun is this has a timer on it. So when I go to bed at night, I have one just like this at home. I'll fill it with filtered water. Water quality, huge, 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 as far as what kind of flavors and aromas you're going to get out of your tea, big time. Anyway, that's a whole nother class. But yeah, this, when you turn the timer on when I go to bed, so it's warmed up when I get up.
Well, now you got a website. You want to tell us about that?
Yes, it's mandalatea.com, mandalatea.com. When we started selling a lot more tea, we had people say, hey, well, you know, I got my friend out in New York, and he'd like to get some of your tea. And after a while of taking phone orders and everything, we thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we just put it online? So we developed a website, an online store, where people can purchase tea and tea wares. The thing that's changed lately that I really wanted to focus on is to become an educational source, an informational resource about tea, about the preparation of tea, and we also happen to sell tea. That's what I want, and a place where people can come find out about tea, learn how to prepare it, and oh, look, they sell tea. Great. So that's one of the things that's changed lately with our new website. There's a video library that we're slowly building. This whole process we went through here today, that's covered in a video. There'll be more videos about how to brew in it, or this one about how to brew in a tea thermos, or how this water heater works. So look for a lot more new videos to show up there, and articles. There's links to articles about health, which is what we began talking about today.
Tea and meditation. We have an article on that. Our journey into tea. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's really fun, too, we've made use of Facebook. And what's fun about that little community that's developing there around our Facebook page is people asking questions about tea or describing a certain experience they've had with a particular tea. We also send out, when people sign up there and like it, then we send out things every day, sometimes every other day, about helpful hints about how to get the most out of tea, or if we found some new information, or if I posted a new video. But it's fun when people ask questions about tea, and then everybody gets to see that. So the Facebook page has become a fun interactive tool to get the expression of tea out there even more.
Well, thanks for taking time out for us today.
Yeah, thanks for being interested.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. We'll probably tee you later.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Garrett Sorensen and Sarah Crawford of Mandala Wellness Center in Winona for talking tea. More information on today's subject can be found at mandalatea.com. That's MANDALATEA.com.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.